okay, it's over. It's definitely over. Thanks, everybody, for staying and for seeing this. It means a lot to us, all of us who put effort into it. If anyone has any questions, wants to ask us something, wants to ask me something. Are there microphones for these people? You can use mine. Since you're so close.
In the credits, you thanked Bruce Sterling. What was it for?
Well, Bruce Sterling was in the film, so we thanked him for talking to us and for being part of that. He had a few interesting things to say. Yeah, you might have missed that. Did John Markoff write any articles? John Markoff has written lots of articles, but none of them on the Kevin Mitnick case since we started making this film. I don't think he's going to write about Kevin ever again. It's one of the side benefits. Anyone else? I thought it was brilliant because I thought that was exactly the issue. That is the American way, and we do need to wake up. A lot of people react in a negative way when they see that, but it was very shocking, and I think we need to be shocked because a lot of what you saw in this film is fucked up. I mean, we have 2 million people in prison for crimes that in many parts of the world would not even be considered crimes. We have cases like the Bernie S. case that happen more often than you could imagine. Bernie was lucky in that he had publicity. What about all the people who don't have publicity? You had Kevin Mitnick locked away for 5 years, and that's not even the whole story. 5 years plus 3 more years of supervised release, plus the time before that when he was in solitary confinement, plus another 3 years of supervised release, plus the time that he was on the run trying to avoid going to prison. And this guy's life has been hell for the last 12 years. And for what? What did he do? He hacked into a system and looked at some source code. Oh, wow, that really is a threat to national security. Come on. We've turned into a very paranoid society, and I think we're going to pay the price for that someday. I mean, we have lots of nice new prisons all around the place, and it's become a really big industry for the economy. But at some point, we're going to realize that half the people are watching over the other half of the people in jail. And it's not a healthy environment to be in. It really isn't. And I think a lot of people in the States are starting to wake up. Whether it's too late, we'll just have to see. We have a microphone now. It's not on, though. Okay. Can anyone hear him? No. Okay, that microphone isn't on. Okay, then it's a useless piece of metal. Basically, you're saying it sounds a lot like the German Democratic Republic. Well, yeah, it sounds like a lot of countries where screwed up things happen. And just because you're the world's biggest democracy, I guess, but we're not really a democracy because the people we vote for don't get into office. So I don't know. I don't know what we are, but we're in trouble for the things that we do. And I don't think we're the only country that has these kind of screwed up policies. Just raise your hand and this guy will come running to you with a mic that I think works now.
How to wake up?
How do we wake up?
The question is what to do, how to do, how to wake up.
Well, as the little warning to the FBI said at the end, the best thing we can do is continue to communicate, make films, do radio shows, have meetings like this where we communicate and spread information and not cave in to fear. They use fear as a weapon. When Bernie had those pictures of the Secret Service, that pissed them off, and they used fear. They came after him. They scared a judge. They scared lawyers. They scared everybody into keeping him in prison for nothing, and they got away with it. They did it. So we have to resist that. We have to resist fear wherever possible. We have to expose it wherever possible. And I think nobody does that better than computer hackers because we're too stupid to be afraid of anything, and we just expose information left and right, and we don't want to keep secrets. And I think that's admirable because a lot of things that are happening today need to be exposed.
I think a very important point you made in the movie is that this community, the hackers, will serve as the enemy to that system. And that a lot of them will be kids, the new prisoners of the future, because the world has ran out of countries that would pose as a believable enemy.
Yeah, that is a big problem for us in the United States. We don't have any more enemies. Now, even North Korea wants to be friends now, and it's just, where are we going to go from here? You know, there's no more Soviet Union. We have to make an enemy somehow. And, yeah, that's us. So we better be careful. Anyone else?
Since the time the movie has been finished, what did you find out else? As I think you continued working on this issue.
How did you get a microphone? Ah, okay, go ahead.
I think you didn't stop working on this issue, and so my question is, what did you find out after the movie has been finished?
Concerning what aspect?
Concerning everything. That hasn't been cleared in the movie.
Kevin's been harassed a lot since he got out of prison by the authorities. He called into H2K during our social engineering panel, and he wasn't allowed to come to the conference because he's not allowed to talk to hackers in a conference setting. He's not allowed to talk about his previous life, you know, in a hacker setting, travel to places. We thought it would be okay for him to talk on the phone from his house and tell his story, but apparently that's not okay either. They're restricting what he can say from his own home phone line, and he was threatened with being put back in prison just for talking to people at H2K, which I thought was simply unbelievable. Other than that, Takedown is still not out, and I don't know if it's ever going to come out in the United States. I did manage to score a copy of it, though, on a DVD from France. But here's the interesting thing. It's a Region 2 encoded DVD. So I'm going to have to break the law to watch this thing. But, as you know, I'm a pirate anyway, according to the MPAA, so they expect no less of me. I guess most of our time this year has been taken up by the ridiculous amount of court cases that have been in passed our way, and I think that indicates a very disturbing trend in the way the net is going, the way society in general is going, and that's litigation involving big corporations, corporations believing that they own the internet now, and they can control who says what, who goes where, who does what, who has what name. And a lot of people ask, why do you register sites like fucknbc.com or verizonreallysucks.com? Why do you antagonize these corporate giants? And the reason we do this is because there are people all over the world who have last names that belong to them but also belong to a corporation, and they're threatened and they're scared into giving up their name on the internet and handing it over to a corporation. There are high school kids who put up websites criticizing their schools, and they're thrown out of school even though it's on their own home computer. There are people who are intimidated so much and they can't fight back. So we can fight back because we have a magazine, we have a radio show, we can make films, we can do all these things. So we have the obligation to push the buttons and to fight the fights, because if nobody fights these fights, we're just going to lose by default. And then the net will be a very unpleasant place where we're playing by corporate America's rules. I don't think anybody wants that. Of corporate America, of course. Anyone else?
So most of the questions concerning Mr. Shimomura remain unanswered in the film. Do you have any infos about what he's doing at the moment, for example, working for NSA or some other agency?
I'll just repeat the last part because I was kind of spooked that I didn't know where you were.
Sorry?
Just repeat the last part of that. Repeat the whole thing. How about that?
Okay. So, Mr. Shimomura was described in the film, and you didn't manage to meet him again.
Meet who again?
You didn't manage to meet him. You were driving behind him.
Tsutomu Shimomura?
Yeah.
No, I met Shimomura once years ago, but that was for about a second. He's never returned any phone calls, never returned any email. He's avoided us like the plague. And, you know, that's his right, but, you know, it leads us to certain conclusions. And my conclusion is that he feels somewhat guilty for what he's done.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you could stand up when you ask a question, it'll be a lot less.
I can do. Hard.
Thank you.
I don't know why you break the law when you watch a legal DVD film.
Say that again?
You said you've got a legal, you've got a DVD film
mm-hmm.
with encryption, but you said you watched, you break the law when you watched it.
Well, no, I haven't even gotten it yet. I haven't broken the law yet. But under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act of the United States, if you bypass the CSS encryption in any way, including using the bypassing the region encoding. If, I don't know if you're aware, but DVDs are region encoded so that DVDs bought here cannot be played in the United States. DVDs in the United States cannot be played here unless you get a DVD player which bypasses the CSS encryption, or buy one in Europe and ship it back home, which is the more expensive option. That's probably illegal too to even do that these days. The point is they're making ridiculous amounts of laws based on wanting to make the most money from a product as possible, so that you will have to buy the same product over and over and over again, and have nothing to say about it. So it's, you know, it's something that is ridiculous and absurd. But I think it was ridiculous and absurd that we were dragged into court simply for publishing source code on our website that we didn't even write, and told that it was illegal for us to link to any site that had that source code that basically allowed people to play DVDs on their Linux machines. It's so absurd that I find it funny. A lot of people find it funny, but it's also very scary. So just raise your hand and someone will run to you with a mic. Okay, someone's running to you, right? Two people are running to you right now. Okay, you got there first.
So what's the status on this?
On which? The DVD case?
Yeah.
We're in appeal right now. It should be heard by a court in March, we're estimating. Now, interesting thing is that there's actually two cases. There's the case the MPAA has brought against us. There's also the case the DVD Copy Control Association is bringing against us for some unknown reason. They're the ones that have charged hundreds of people around the world. Anybody who had the DECSS code on their page was liable to get a letter in the mail. These people are in a local court in California. They have no jurisdiction, yet somehow they think they do, and they're sending us all these legal papers, which I think is a complete waste of time. So that might explode into something else, and there's all kinds of other things as well. But it's a fight that I think ultimately, and I don't know how far in the future ultimately will be, but ultimately we will win this fight, because ultimately we have to win this fight. Otherwise, we pretty much lose all control of technology. You can watch a television program, and you won't be allowed to tape it. You won't be allowed to watch it more than once. You won't be allowed to watch it in your bedroom. You have to watch it in your living room. You have to do whatever they tell you to do, and you won't be able to question it, because we didn't fight back hard enough. And I think a lot of people have woken up, and I thank the MPAA for that.
How do you stand this fight? How do you stand this? All this work and all
how do
this
I
time.
Stand it? Well, I guess I just try not to think about it too much. I have a lot of support from people all over the place. One thing, and again, I have to thank the MPAA for this. One thing this lawsuit has done is bring lots of communities together. It's brought hackers, the open source community, civil libertarians, and just ordinary people walking down the street. It's brought all of them together to realize who the real enemy is, and to strike out against them and resist this kind of control that they seem to want in everything from music to movies to software. It's a really bad time right now, and a very scary time. And if you're not awake, you're either not listening or you don't care. And it's something that we can't afford to walk away from. Over there.
You said that you think that the way to fight is to show the cases. It seems that you have a trust that if you will show the case, it will solve something. Don't you think about better way to fight than just to show the case?
I'm not sure what you mean by show the case.
expose it, make a movie about, etc.
Better ways than
better
to expose
way,
it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
because the question is, okay, there is some people that in your side, but they are not the majority. They are not who determine what will happen.
I agree that the average person doesn't determine much. We've learned that over and over again in our country. But I'm kind of at a loss as to what else we can do apart from fight back with words and educate people and expose things. I'm a journalist. I've always been involved in uncovering things and exposing things. And I'm open to any kind of suggestion as to what might be a better tactic. We've tried demonstrations. We've tried letter writing campaigns. We've tried phone calls. There's all kinds of things you can do. And it may all fail. But that's no reason not to try, not to at least get a few thousand people on your side so that, you know, you don't go down without a fight and that maybe you'll wake up some other people. And who knows where that will lead someday. The important thing is to do something. And if people have ideas, I want to hear them, absolutely.
I always thought that... Me. I always thought that credit card fraud is a very popular thing in the USA. So I actually wondered why this big case was rolled out by the FBI. How many big hacker cases were before the Kevin Mitnick case in the USA? I just think they need an enemy to show that they are worse, that they are doing something against hackers.
Yeah, they do a very bad job of it. For instance, a couple of years ago, there was a case where there were a couple of teenage kids in California that had been found to have broken into NASA. You know, everybody hacks NASA, and these kids had gotten in, and it was described as the most persistent and professional attack in the history of the military or something like that. And a couple of 14-year-olds from California, that's it? That's the worst we've ever faced? That's kind of good. And it's also kind of bad. Right after that, literally 2 days after that, Janet Reno announced all this new federal funding for some new anti-hacker program. The whole thing is planned out very badly sometimes because it's so obvious what they're doing. If you see a story come up out of nowhere that blames a hacker for something that shows absolutely no evidence, it's a precursor to another story that's going to prey on the public fears that the first story made in the first place. And so people will say, yeah, of course, we need to lock all the hackers away because of what they did, even though there's no proof. If you look at the substance of most of the stories, including the Kevin Mitnick story, you see a lot of innuendo, a lot of accusations. You see the Christy McNichol thing. You see the NORAD thing. But there's never any evidence. And when you ask the people who write the stories, where's the evidence? They're like, well, I don't know, really. Let's look at that over there. they don't really want to expose their sources because they don't really have any sources. They're writing things based on speculation, based on their wild imagination. And unfortunately, that's how a lot of journalism works. Stories are made up. And hacking is the only hobby, I guess is the best way to describe it, where you can go to a journalist and say, hi, I'm a hacker. I can do this, 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 and this, and they'll believe you without any proof whatsoever. And they'll write a story about you. I've seen this happen time and time again. If any of you saw the horrible MTV special of last year, you know what I'm talking about. You had people say, yeah, I've done everything there is to do on the internet. And I'm 16 years old and I've done it all. And they didn't question it. They didn't say, well, what did you do? The kid probably doesn't even have a computer, for God's sake. There are all kinds, I don't want to name names, but there's all kinds of people that we could point to that do this, that fall into the spotlight of fame. And we have to resist this, and we have to expose it when it happens, because the media sure as hell isn't going to do it. They just want the ratings. They just want the headlines. Go ahead.
All right. Earlier you mentioned that you're here.
Sorry, you'll be next.
Go ahead. Over here. Earlier you mentioned that you're fighting fight, So what do you regard as your main enemy? The media, the commercial world of the USA? What's your main target?
My main enemy? Apathy. Ignorance. People who don't care and let things happen to them. The media isn't the enemy. The media is a tool. And right now other people are using that tool. We need to use that tool. In the words of Jello Biafra, we need to become the media ourselves. We need to control how information is presented about us, because no one else is going to do a better job of that than us. No one else knows the facts. And we also have quite a few educated things to say about technology and privacy, because we know firsthand how fragile those things are. So I don't even necessarily consider big business the enemy, because they're doing what big business does. I consider people who stand back and just let it happen, they're the ones who are really responsible for this. And that encompasses every individual. You have to wake up and show your outrage when things like this happen, because they're not going to stop voluntarily. That, you know, Exxon is not going to say, oh, well, we're going to we really want to plant flowers now because it's just such a nice thing to do. They're not going to do that unless somebody threatens them, unless somebody exposes them for doing evil things. And, you know, that's really the only way you accomplish change. Did you ever get a working microphone?
Yes.
Okay. I have a question. The Kevin Mitnick case is such a blatant case of abuse of power. What do traditional civil libertarians like the American Civil Liberties Union, what's their stand? Do they have a stand? Do they react to your calls towards action? Or?
Well, that's a sore point with me, too, because the ACLU really has not reacted at all. And I find that very disappointing, because this is exactly the kind of thing the ACLU should be interested in. They shy away from it because they buy into the media perception. They say, hackers, oh my God, we don't want to be associated with hackers. We know what they can do. When in actuality, they don't know what they can do. They really don't know anything about it, and they haven't taken the effort to try and learn. We've contacted the ACLU. We've tried to get them interested. EFF really hasn't been very interested in hacker cases, and the most notable exception, of course, is this last year with the DECSS case, where they basically came forward and saved their ass on that one. So these people can be reached. You just have to present yourself in such a way that they understand the importance of the case. So, yeah, this is a case about computer hackers. That does not mean that the person is guilty until proven innocent. That means the person is a human being who is entitled to the same rights as any other person. And we can't jump to conclusions because of the way the media has labeled him. I think if they just do some digging around, they'll discover this on their own. But since they won't dig around, we have to tell them ourselves. We'll send a copy of the film to them.
Yes. I also have a question. Well, all along the film I saw, I was always missing...
Can you speak up just a little?
Yes. I wondered all the time when I watched the film, why didn't you try to reach some actors, some music actors? I'm thinking of maybe Red Hot Chili Peppers or something like that, or Public Enemy, just to have another sort of a way to reach the people.
You're asking why we didn't reach out to celebrities?
Yes, because there's something still missing for me. This movement of hackers and the movement of musicians is still not happening anywhere, I think.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I understand. You're asking if we should reach out to celebrities for hacker causes?
Yeah.
Well, I don't believe in targeting people and saying, you know, you speak on our behalf. I think we can do a pretty good job speaking for ourselves if somebody will just listen. What we tried to do with the film is just go to regular people on the street and hear what they have to say about this. Hear the impressions when they're presented with the facts. But, you know, we did get a couple of celebrities in there. There was a guy from a film called Pi that was in the New York theater scene. You get celebrities walking by. Kevin Bacon, well, he just walked by, but he was in the film too. And, you know, I've talked to celebrities, various people that are interested in the case, but, you know, when you're a celebrity, it's a very funny thing. You don't want to tarnish your image by, you know, speaking out on controversial things like this. They're, you know, they fall into the same misperceptions, so you have to be, you know, wary of that. Will the movie get to cinemas? Well,
thank you.
Go ahead.
You got my question.
Okay. well, basically, we wouldn't try to stop it, but the way I've learned a lot about the movie industry over the last year, and it's very hard to get things into cinemas without the MPAA telling the cinemas what to play.
Just some TV station, at least.
We won't stop it. I mean, if people, when we release the videotape, we welcome people to take it to their cable TV stations and have it played there, whatever it takes. But you see, here's the thing. When you have something played in theaters or on TV, usually you lose control of the film, of the distribution, and that's when they start to make changes, they start to, you know, edit words out or worry about offending somebody, and we're not going to give up control of that. That's how you wind up with you know, absolutely no rights to your own works. A lot of musicians are in that very very boat right now because they signed away their rights to a record company, and now they make nothing from their music. Their music can be used for commercials, it can be used for all kinds of things they don't agree with, and they have no say in it. And, you know, we'd rather make a little less money off of it and keep control of what we say. And I think we have, with a little imagination, we can get this film out to a lot of people, you know, through conferences and maybe through theaters that still aren't under the control of the MPAA. And who knows? We're open to suggestions on this. We definitely want to get it out, though.
You mentioned journalists who didn't even demand evidence of people, and I think it's because they don't know, they don't dare even ask. So I think the way you started in that film to get in touch with public, I think it's the only way to get your thing across. I'd like to ask, what was your experience? How interested was the average person on the street in what you had to tell them?
That was a very interesting thing, because the average person was extremely interested in what we were saying. If you saw outside the theater, especially in New York, people, when you hand out things, you expect people to just, you know, walk by and you know, maybe curse you or something like that. And a couple people in California did, but in New York, people were coming up to us asking for more of them, and some of them had already heard of the case, some of them wanted to know more, some of them wanted to get involved. And we also experienced the same thing when we were handing out leaflets for the ECSS case. A lot of people had already heard of it, they were interested, they wanted to learn more and get involved. So the people are definitely interested out there, there's no question about that. We can't not be there to fill in the gaps for them, to explain what the issues are and to tell them how they can get involved, because a lot of people are following things that go on. You'd be amazed. We stuck those Free Kevin stickers up all over the place. And as we said in the film, you know, people didn't know who Kevin was at first, but eventually they're going to keep asking and somebody will tell them. That's exactly what happened. How many Free Kevin stickers were distributed? Well, you may have noticed there are two different kinds. Kerry, who was in the film towards the end in North Carolina, had made the black ones, the ones that Kevin was holding up in the prison cell. I'm not sure how many of those she made. We've made tens of thousands. I don't know specifically how many. We didn't really keep track. But enough so that you see them in interesting places, and they're the kind of stickers that stay up for a good long time, that they outlive the signs that they're stuck to sometimes. So they're out there, and if you ask, I'd say one out of every five people will know something about the case, and that's pretty good. And I think we can use that particular type of tactic for almost any cause we're involved in. For instance, we have, in fact, I have a bunch of stickers here, which those of you who last till the end can come up and take one. Stop the MPAA. It's basically the same idea. A lot of people don't know who's the MPAA, you know. They're the people that make the ratings of the films. They're the people that everybody submits their movie to so that they get a rating and get played in the theater. They're the people that impose censorship and say what curse words you have to take out to get an R rating, you know, and they have a lot of control, a lot of power. And the next question is, okay, why must they be stopped? Eventually, people will hear the story. Eventually, people will realize how it affects them. So that's what getting stickers up, getting a phrase commonly known accomplishes. When people hear "Stop the MPAA," they'll know why. They'll know what it's about.
Yeah, my question is
the classical left-wing resistance. Did you get connected with people who fight for life from Mumia Abu Jamal? For example, there was the speech about solidarity with musicians. Rage Against the Machine made a song for Mumia Abu Jamal. There is a resistance all over the world. And did you connect people out of these solidarity groups? Did you talk about them with them about Kevin?
I've talked to people in the Mumia campaign about this. It's, I mean, the Mumia case is a very interesting case in its own, and it's another tragedy happening in America. But it is a different case. We share a lot of the same people, but we also share people from other cases, and we share people that completely disagree with Mumia. We don't want to alienate people and say, well, if you're for Kevin, you have to be for this, and you have to be for that. We basically want to get people involved in just that particular issue, and if they're interested in more issues, more power to them. We try to introduce all different groups to each other, like at H2K is what we try to do. Haven't you?
Okay. My question was just if there could be work together or something like that. And the other thing is, in Prague, where the resistance was against the World Bank and IMF, there was an alternative media center, and left-wing video firmers all around the world put their pictures they took into the net, and everybody around the world could make his own film of these pictures. Last time in Nizza, next time in Davos, the next big meeting of the world heroes, owners of the world will take place, and there will be resistance. And you can use these structures to spread the video all around the world to make alternative media politic.
Oh, there's no question that the net can be used in a extremely effective way. How many people here have heard of the Independent Media Center? Okay, a few. Not very many. The Independent Media Center is something that was born out of the WTO protest in Seattle last year. How many people have heard about that? Okay, you all heard about that. Basically, they're a group of journalists from all different organizations who use the internet to put the news out, to do what the media was not doing. There were TV stations in Seattle that saw what was going on and refused to report it. They said that if your demonstration is not authorized by the police, we will not report on it. It's like, well, what kind of media is this that doesn't report things unless they're authorized by the police? That's American media? Okay. So what these guys did was they went around with their cameras, very similar to the camera we have. In fact, the same camera in lots of occasions, mini DV. And they went around with cassette recorders. They went around with just still cameras. They went around with pens and paper. And they reported what they saw. And they went to the Independent Media Center, which was basically put in a location in Seattle days before the demonstrations were to begin. And they sent it out over the internet. They had an internet radio station that people could tune to from all around the world. And when the police claimed that they were not shooting rubber bullets into the crowd and that they would never do such a thing, well, the Independent Media Center presented video footage of rubber bullets being fired, and they put it on the internet, and the Seattle police changed their story inside the hour. The Independent Media Center is one hope that we have of getting news out that the mass media will not cover. And for that reason, we have an office in New York City that we've donated to the Independent Media Center so that we have a base in New York. We have a way of getting news out when we need to do it. Other people have a way to do that as well. And I think that's something, whatever city, whatever country you happen to be from, that's something that is really important to pursue, to support. It's not about taking a stand on a particular issue. You have to agree with you know, the Mumia case or any other case. It's about getting independent voices out there, and I think most everybody agrees that that's something that's gotten extremely hard to do with corporate media. The net is our hope. The net is the way of doing this. I realized just last week, I work for a radio station, WBAI, you may have seen it in the film. We're undergoing quite a bit of a crisis right now with all kinds of management takeovers, and a lot of people are being kicked off the air, a lot of people being locked out of the studios. We have security guards walking around now. It's like an armed Gestapo, and it's a very scary thing. And I'm rather worried about what faces me when I get home. When I was in Amsterdam, I was listening to what was going on over the radio on my personal computer, on my laptop that I brought with me, and I realized I don't have to be there to listen to the radio. I can walk around in a wireless LAN with a wireless computer listening to the radio wherever I choose. And that is the future. That is what media will become. Media will become something that is delivered over the internet, something that you choose, and that is what we have to build. We have to build it before the same people that control the media now build it for us and control it for us. We have the opportunity to put all kinds of things on the internet. And I'm sorry. They always control it after you. Yeah. Individuals begin and the big corporations move. Yeah, I know. That may be a realistic way of looking at it. Maybe a very cynical way of looking at it. But I don't think that's a reason not to try. You know, and not to give them one hell of a fight. I don't really see how they can take the internet away from us. I mean, I can have theories about how they might do it, but I think we're too strong for them to just come and say, well, it's all going to be Microsoft. It's all going to be, you know, Disney. I don't know, unless we let it happen.
I wanted to know whether the film is, here I am, whether the film is freely available.
If the film is available?
Freely available. And where can I get it?
The film, as soon as we get permission for the music that we used, because like I said, we don't want to get sued anymore, we have legal people working on that. They need a microphone up here, by the way. As soon as we get that, we'll be able to make copies, and then we can distribute them. We have an internet store, so if you go to our main website at 2600.com, there'll be a link there. There'll be an announcement there when it's available. But it will be available as soon as possible. Okay. We need a microphone up here because... Oh, you have one. Okay.
I have a microphone. I'd like to have your opinion on the public perception of hackers in the U.S. And in my opinion, what I see, what I've learned, what I see in the papers in the U.S., the media perception of hackers is a lot worse than it is in Germany. In Germany, for example, hackers are sometimes seen as like bad people trying to steal money from bank accounts, but also very often are the people that still tell the truth about, say, security systems of banks, how secure Microsoft money really is, how some banks are screwing up customers if they have trouble with credit card fraud, with EC card fraud, things like that. So there is like a positive picture besides the bad picture of hackers in Germany. And I don't think that's the same in the US. Do you think?
We've had some good coverage. See, I never want to give up completely on any particular media source. I mean, I'll give up on certain networks. Like, I will never talk to MTV again, ever. But I won't give up on TV. There may be a TV journalist out there that will do a really good job. He may work for a network, he may work for a local TV station, but we should not deny that person the opportunity to make a good story about an interesting subject, and we shouldn't deny the viewers the possibility of seeing that. But what I think we should do also is if they do a really bad job, we should let the world know that too, because they don't like to be embarrassed. And MTV was very embarrassed by the reaction that they got to their awful piece last year. And I think they realized that we're never going to talk to them again or help them again, so they've kind of slunk away into a corner. But there are all kinds of other outlets out there. We should never give up completely. I've had very good pieces with BBC, CBC in Canada, some German journalists as well. They are out there, and Japanese too. You have to just keep looking and realize who does a good job, who does a bad job. Let the world know either way. When someone does a good job, let them know too. Then we'll have a chance that it will become something, you know, more normal. You have a microphone in 2 seconds.
Something that Ron said about the public perception of hackers. I think what's happened in Europe in the late 80s and early 90s is that there have been links between hackers in the public view and political movements of all kinds, in Germany with the Chaos Computer Club, in Holland with Hacktic at that time, and that has t- taught a lot of people early on what criminalization would look like, and that they would need to talk to journalists on their own terms and talk to politicians, teach people about these issues. That has happened early on. And also, I think what has played an important role is that in the States you have this evil plea bargaining system. The movie has some in it. So a lot of what the hacker community in the States turned out to do in the late 80s and early 90s was knocking each other out to the FBI to get a better deal on their own cases.
And that's one reason why I think it's always a bad idea to be part of a group, you know, of a, you know, your particular group of hackers in your particular town. You're better than all the others. It just leads to woe and bad feelings all around. Yeah, get together with people, share information, but it's not about who's the best hacker. It's not about who can find the most exploits and make the others look like idiots. We see too much of that in America. And I'd like to see more individuals get involved. I'd like to see more sharing of information. That's what we at 2600 try to do, is keep the personalities and emotions out of it and just, you know, go for the information. But actually, Rob, I wanted to ask you, have you ever had any luck talking to a politician and getting them to actually change? In America, we've never had any such luck. But basically, everybody in America, every politician in the House of Representatives and the Senate, voted for the Digital Millennium Copyright Act on a voice vote. There's not even a record of them voting. It's unanimous. Nobody opposed it. Nobody has ever come out against it. So,
well, you got the best politicians money can buy.
Yeah, money did buy them. That's the problem, and I think that's more of a problem in the United States than in other countries. Anyone else? All the way over there. Oh, you have a mic.
Okay. I have a question. How long has Kevin been in jail? In jail or without having a trial?
Kevin, by the time Kevin got out, he had been in jail almost exactly 5 years. It was a little less than 5 years. It was 4 years and 11 months and a few days. And that was just for the recent offense, which, as we said, was basically for associating with Louis DePayne and accessing someone's voicemail. That's what got them to come after him in the first place. That's why he went on the run. And when he was on the run, he was accused of lying on the telephone, saying he was somebody he wasn't, and copying some source code. And again, before that, in 1988, he had been in prison for a year, 8 months of which were in solitary confinement, simply for looking at source code. And, you know, a lot of people have a very callous attitude about this. They say, well, he's a repeat offender. He deserves what he gets. Unfortunately, that seems to be a way a lot of Americans are thinking now, that any crime that you commit, no matter how minor, if you keep committing the crime, if you keep jaywalking, you know, or ripping the little tag off your bed at the bottom of, you know, it says, do not rip this off. If you do anything minor, you're a criminal, the same as if you kill somebody. We have laws such as in California where if you commit three crimes, even if the last one is not a violent crime, you go to prison for life. And it's insanity that's born out of reactionary fear of what criminals are doing. And it's a very, very scary time to be in America. And that's why we feel the need, you know, to speak out and to make films and write articles about this as much as possible.
Yes? I'm wondering what's Kevin living off right now? I mean, is he working?
He's trying. He occasionally gives talks to conferences, you know, legitimate conferences, not hacker conferences. They allow him to do that occasionally, and he can get a speaker's fee for that. He's also looking into the possibility of doing a radio show on a radio station in Los Angeles, where he'll talk about technology issues. But he's not allowed to touch a computer. When he originally got out, he wasn't allowed to touch a cell phone. Fortunately, that was just too ridiculous, and they finally relented and let him get a cell phone, but it's not allowed to have any internet access. He can't browse the web or anything like that or send email, and they have to carefully look at his phone bill every time it comes in. So it's a ridiculous amount of restrictions. The thing is, supervised release is supposed to reintegrate you into society. It's not supposed to be a punishment, and they're using it as a punishment. And it's very unfortunate that this is happening. I mean, this guy's life has been destroyed by ridiculously minor things. And again, I have to wonder how many other people are in the same boat. Go ahead.
How does that, do they explain this? Is it part of the sentence? Or how is this explained? That he must not touch a computer?
This is excuse me a second. Hi, I'm a little busy right now. Can you hear me? What's that? Yeah, but let me call you back, all right? Okay, I'll do that. Bye-bye. Always answer the phone. Never let it ring. Basically, that's the system. That's the way the system works. It's not something they have to explain. It's that's it. That's how it is. They know no other way. It's a very frightening way things have progressed. But you have to understand that when people grow up in a society like that, they don't see anything wrong with it. You know, kids today see this as the norm. They see people being sent to prison for things like this, and that's what happens. That's what is done. It's up to us to correct them and say, no, this isn't right. This isn't the way it's done. Eventually, people will wake up. I don't know what it'll take, but people will have to wake up if we're to survive. Okay. I think I've worn you all out. Anybody else? Okay. Thanks so much for staying late. And if you want a sticker, we have stickers up here. Just there's probably enough for everybody if there's no mobs.
Okay, please do us a favor and don't place them inside the house because these are the good ones. And
yeah, don't deface anything around
they're
here.
They have the same color like our wonderful streetcars and subways. So. Wenn wir hier ein bisschen durchgelüftet haben, ungefähr so eine halbe Stunde, gibt es hier ein bisschen Abendprogramm.